This is Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We have a new episode every Thursday. This is episode 170. Wow, we're getting up there. This week, we are discussing upcoming holiday releases like Unbroken, Into the Woods, and others. We were going to discuss The Interview, but it was apparently no longer acceptable to do that, so I don't know if that means we have to stop
even discussing it here, mentioning it, we are under threat.
I don't know what the terrorist rules are. I don't have the handbook, but I'm pretty sure we have to stop podcasting. Like right now.
Go into hiding. Like
check you guys out later.
Scott's like, I'll go to bed.
Out.
That's cool. We are also going to have spoiler-free reviews of The Hobbit, Battle of the Five Armies, Exodus, Gods and Kings, and a movie coming out next year called What We Do in the Shadows. Our From the Outside In topic this week, what is the worst movie ever made? Can't believe we've never done this before, but we have not. So we're going to finally have our picks for what we think is the worst movie ever made, as well as the listener picks, which some of them are fantastic. And some of them are really good movies. I'm just saying. Just a couple of them.
So you're saying they're wrong?
No, not at all. My opinion. My opinion. Latest in movie and TV news, including our own trivia segments. My name is Aaron Peterson. I will be your host du jour today. Joining me is Scotty Clark.
Is that host of the day?
I don't know.
I'll have that.
Hi, Scott.
Hey, how you doing?
Justin McCumber?
Your opinion about opinions is so wrong.
Oh, he want to punch you in the face. And Brian Williams.
What's up there, sugar tits?
Not much, but wait. I'm glad we're not going for that clean feel. That
way to class it up.
You don't get intros this week? No. Hey, by the way, Scott likes video games.
I was going to, but I really didn't have time to think of anything funny. So just names. Just names. This is like our last regular show of the year. Mm-hmm. And then it's not the last show. There's still going to be another show on Christmas. You'll get the Hobbit special. And then we're doing a best of volume 2 listener picks at the end of the year. But it's the last time we're all together. And so I don't want to have to explain who you all are. Go listen to last week's. I do it really cool there.
You do it for the listeners, but you don't do it for us.
Yeah, pretty much. I do it for them. I don't do it for you. Okay. You know who you are, right?
I know who I am.
Before you get too puffy-chested about this being episode 170, last week was episode 370 of the Dead Robot Society. So keep it down there, childrens.
Yeah, but we have more listeners.
Wow. I don't know about that. And
yeah, I don't know about that.
I'm not part of the fight. I don't want to pick that fight.
If y'all two don't know about it, then so far I'm right.
That's true.
That's a good argument. Good argument.
You can't prove it wrong. It's not untrue.
Our Christmas episode is up. So if you have not heard it, the Christmas extravaganza is newly up. And if, like I said, if you haven't heard it, Scott does a fantastic poem tailored to Hollywood Outsider listeners.
It was a lot of fun. That was one of the most fun I've had at this table. Seriously.
Because you didn't have to.
Because we weren't slapping you around.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, now that you mention it, I didn't get.
Hey, let me tell you a story about this, okay?
Mr. This is going to be another heartwarming story. Mm-mm. Fuck both of you and your touching personal stories.
No, this is funny. So we're doing the Christmas special, and Scotty McLean, who always tries, I'm going to keep it clean because my students, just in case one of them stole an episode and went in the bathroom and listened to it, refuses to, you know, he always tries to keep it clean or whatever. And I say, okay, we'll have a clean episode so that way anybody can listen to it. Made it all the way through until he does his poem and he drops the F-bomb right in the middle.
I don't remember having a conversation that the Christmas episode was going to be, like, totally clean.
Well, you did see me several times, like, stop myself and repeat myself because I was such shit and
That's
had to
true.
Redo it.
That's true.
God.
But I had it written already at that point. That would have looked
okay, Ron Burgundy.
That would have destroyed the joke. That was
screwing.
You could have used frack. You could have used frail.
Screwing. Fracking.
Frail.
Frailing.
Well,
frailing.
From Farscape, they always called it frailing.
No, only you know what that means. I don't know what you just said.
My geek cred is established. Let's move on.
Okay. Well, there's plenty of episodes coming up. Disney CEO Bob Iger indicated, and this is more for me. I don't know if I'm excited or scared to death, but he indicated another Indiana Jones is still in the pipeline. They're just trying to get Star Wars out the door. My indication from that is that they would probably have to reboot it because Harrison Ford is about 5 minutes shy of dying.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Am I wrong? I don't think he's falling down and not getting back up.
I don't even think he's that far. He hasn't got life alert yet.
He's 70-something, man. He's up there.
He hurt himself on the set of Star Wars.
Yeah, and all he does is pilot.
What do you think he's going to do, leaping from Jeep to Jeep? I mean, he still does his own stunts, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
I don't know if the AARP allows that.
What do you guys think? Is it time for a reboot? Is it too soon after Crystal Skull? I have to remain impartial because I know how unobjective I am on this topic.
Just give it to Bradley Cooper and be done with it.
Ooh, I do like that.
Yeah.
I would go with Taylor Kitsch, but that's my personal choice.
I will punch you in the mom and daddy buttons.
I like him a lot too, but his run of pretty much just tank submarine and just about anything they put him in is, it's a little too strong. So I would go with somebody a little more bankable.
Yeah, definitely.
I still don't think that stuff is Kitsch's fault, though. I mean, it's not like...
It's not.
One of them's strictly titled.
We all agree that. I mean, I think we all agree that he is not the thing that... the reason for all these movies tanking, but he is the common denominator.
He does still have that stink of failure attached to him, whether he, dealt it or not.
Is it Brad Pitt's fault that he's so beautiful? No. Sometimes things just are, Scott. There's nothing you can't point to blame. But he was in all those movies that flopped, so he's kind of seen as the flopper. We were the floppies.
See, but none of them were Indiana Jones, is kind of my point.
Yeah, I don't need him to make that flop, too.
That's what I'm saying. I just have a hard time. But even Crystal Skulls did okay, right?
Yeah, but that had Harrison Ford. Harrison Ford can overcome just about anything.
Right, but I think if you made
the Millennium Falcon, apparently.
But I think if you made an Indiana Jones movie with Chris Kattan, it would do well in theater.
No, you are mistaken.
No.
See, Brian, the voice of reason, is like no. Uh-uh.
Hey, I'm all about some hyperbole, but
I don't know if you guys heard this. I wanted to mention because it makes me chuckle. The King Kong spinoff, which was called Skull Island, was moved to March 10th, 2017. They moved it back a little bit further. And they changed the name of it from Skull Island to Kong, Skull Island. Might be one of the worst titles I've ever heard.
Why is it so terrible?
Because it's like in your face. It almost feels like NASCAR or WWE. I don't know.
Well, I could, from a outsider's perspective... You call something Skull, just straight up Skull Island?
Mm-hmm.
People don't know what it is. I didn't know that before the last movie came out. I never knew that took place on Skull Island originally.
You didn't?
No. I mean, King Kong, even kids know who King Kong is. Even if they've never seen the movie, they know of the character. They know King Kong is a big ape, or don't shoot me, which I'm saying the wrong one, Justin.
Well, King Kong is a gorilla, and gorillas are apes. The easiest way to tell the difference is that monkeys have tails. Gorillas and chimps, being apes, do not have tails.
Oh, shit.
We as human beings, not having tails, we are also apes. But apes and monkeys are all under the heading of primates.
I feel like science just got
boom,
told.
Just dropping knowledge.
Yep. I just got hit by it right in the forehead.
I feel like I should have known that answer.
Yeah.
Considering my profession.
You only teach children. It's cool. Okay, movie new. Well, that's the title change. Kong! Skull Island. Justin, do you like that title?
I like Skull Island better. I like the mystery. Even if people don't know King Kong, that's where King Kong comes from. I imagine a trailer might reveal that or something. I think it adds an unnecessary word and lengthens it. Skull Island, I think, is a really cool title.
I think if you just went with Skull Island, it might look like a movie about a bunch of rich kids at college, maybe on their own island, turns into some weird fraternity thing.
I see where you're going. Oh, very nicely.
The skulls.
I got it.
So, yeah, you got to throw in Kong or King Kong or something.
Yeah, well, I think you go to the trailer.
You go by straight up by the title, you're going to be surprised when you see a giant ape on the screen, is all I'm saying.
I don't think, seriously. I mean, how long, all they would have to do is one establishing shot where it pans up from Kong and then shows the island. Boom, problem solved. It's over. I don't understand. Okay, The Walking Dead, they have announced that they finally have a spinoff and where it's going to be. I mean, they've announced the cast and everything else, but where it was going to be was it was kind of a closely kept secret. It's going to be in Los Angeles. Oh, that's unique. Justin, are you happy that they're going to have a little spinoff in L.A.?
You know, I am, and I'm really glad they're going with L.A., or, you know, at least a city, because for the most part, The Walking Dead is just a guide to the backwoods of Georgia. And the few times they go into a town, it almost seems odd because I'm so used to seeing them running amongst the trees. So having this set in L.A., I think, is a good idea. What I also love is that this is going to be a prequel kind of sorts where it's going to really chronicle the early days of the zombie apocalypse coming on, which is something we really didn't get much of in The Walking Dead other than an occasional, very rare flashback. Mm-hmm. Basically, we just saw the apocalypse from Lincoln Grimes' point of view when he wakes up at the hospital. Rick Grimes.
Who's Lincoln Grimes? Is that his brother?
Well, Lincoln Andrews plays Rick Grimes.
It's Andrew Lincoln.
Whatever. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
Have you seen this show?
God, you got a bunch of different presidents on your mind?
Fuck. Yeah, so Andrew Jackson will be in this show. So it's going to tell, you know, how this thing – hopefully I don't know if it'll tell how it got started, but it will at least show the fall of civilization as opposed to having already fallen. And so I'm curious to see it. I'm looking forward to this.
I think it could go really well or really bad very quickly because for two reasons. I think it could go really well if they eventually somehow do these different spinoffs in different areas and they all kind of converge. Like, yeah, Avengers style.
Slow down. I only want one spinoff. I don't need like eight of them.
If it succeeds, yeah, you really think it's not going to happen?
Well, and converging from Los Angeles area, because we don't, from what I understand, we're not assured that it's definitely in Los Angeles or just in that it's just going to be filmed in Los Angeles. We don't even know if it's going to be, you know, it could be represented of a different city, right?
Not TV Line.
Well, it will be LA, yeah, but whether or not they will shoot it in LA or somewhere like Vancouver is unclear, but the show will be staged as though it's in LA.
That's right.
Okay. All right.
You can't tell the wannabe actors from the zombies. I mean, they all look alike.
Here's where I think this could go horribly wrong, though, especially if...
Well, if they cast the wrong guy.
It's a spinoff.
Exactly.
Well... But you know,
Walking Dead, Vegas.
They're obviously not going to air at the same time that the proper Walking
Dead. Yeah, it's going to be like to fill airtime in between.
Right,
yeah.
It's going to be staggered. Mm-hmm. So I could see them doing well, this one spinoff doing well, and them getting this idea that, oh, we'll just do another one, and we're going to have staggered some Walking Dead seasons going to be
Walking
going
Dead
throughout
Canada.
The year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then it's going to be oversaturation, and we're not going to – and then we're going to start to lose – interest in the original show, I think.
You know, it's a global phenomenon. So, I mean, you could actually see, like, Walking Dead, Bangkok and Tokyo mm-hmm. and
Berlin.
That sounds exciting. Moscow, yeah. Just get them all in there.
The zombie sex!
This is zombie space station.
Well, that'll be interesting. We've talked a lot about the show, and I don't want to just keep going back to that well, but... It's interesting what they keep doing with this show, and they're trying to make it fresh. So I hope they succeed. Take it out of the rural area, put it in a city. Maybe that might change the dynamic. There is talk that it could be a prequel. That would be really interesting if they actually go that route.
Oh, like to go – maybe we start to see
– Before the apocalypse and
mm-hmm. – yeah. Let's see
hey,
how
and, I and remember, in all fairness, when The Walking Dead first started, they were only given six episodes. Obviously, a very small budget. You had to film in an area that was very cost effective, and having it go start out in the basically in the woods was, you know, pretty much a good way to keep costs down. So, fortunately, after it, you know, just took off like wildfire, you kind of had to stay in the woods. So, it would be good to see kind of a change of pace where it's a little bit more urban environment.
Well, speaking of spinoffs. We've got another one, Rocky Balboa, or I don't know if it's a sequel or a spinoff, but it's a movie called Creed, and it's going to be Rocky Balboa, you know, Sylvester Stallone. He's going to return as Rocky Balboa. He's going to train Apollo Creed's grandson, who's going to be played by Michael B. Jordan, also playing Johnny Storm in the new Fantastic Four.
Apparently he's in every upcoming movie.
Yeah, basically every movie that's coming up, he's going to be in. Brian, do you think this is the moment where we officially jump the shark on sequels? Or whatever this
is called? Well, at least on the Rocky franchise, I hope. I don't know why they just can't let it end.
Stallone, I don't think, will let it end.
No, but between this and the Terminator, you know, with a long gray-headed skydiving Schwarzenegger, I just want these guys to just put them on an ice float and just put them out the pasture at this point.
Just ship them out there to the
penguins. Yeah, I don't want to say I'm getting tired of them because I do love them and respect their place in Hollywood and Hollywood history. But it's like they're just watering down their images and whoring themselves out
to be fair, didn't Rocky already whore itself out when it got to the fifth or sixth one?
Yeah, but that last one was a good movie. That was a really good movie. And it ended great. So let it be.
See, I find this more interesting than what Balboa did. Because instead of an old guy trying to just survive a fight, basically, and survive, I mean...
That was kind of Rocky Balboa, yeah.
That's all he was doing.
Trying to make it to the
end.
Yay,
he didn't get killed. He made it through a run. He made it to the bell.
We saw that with a Robert De Niro movie.
Yeah, right. That too. But this one is more of a passing the torch kind of thing. I think it's kind of cool. He's not going to be in the ring fighting. He's going to be Mickey, basically. Or Mick. I think that seems like a more natural progression for the original Rocky than... Get back in the ring and try to act like you're in your.
I get it, but they tried that with Rocky V, where he was
his son.
He directed that one, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yep.
So he's not going to be. I'm hoping he's not going to be directing.
No,
this one.
And here's the problem with Stallone, and I obviously have been a fan of his for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really the only impression I can get right, except for my masterful Sean Connery, which you guys just do not appreciate, but. I don't understand why he seems to be the guy that cannot let his past go. He just cannot let his past go. He keeps talking about how he wants to, you know, move on into the future and the next. But it seems like he's desperately trying to hold on to those past glories with every single thing that he does.
Well, we all kind of would if we were in that position, wouldn't we? I mean, that's what.
But but he does it to the point where he to a detriment to himself, to his own legacy. Because he is tarnishing a great history with some bad calls, I think. Mm-hmm. Well, not awful calls, but...
He's roofing and raping his legacy.
Yeah, there you go.
He's Bill Cosby-ing his legacy.
He is, whoa. Which is now a verb. It is a verb. That and Taylor Swift. And if you didn't like the Bill Cosby one, you could just Taylor Swift that.
I wonder how young people... And by that, I mean, you know, kids in their 20s and early or late teens, early 20s. How do they feel about all of these old franchises continually getting, you know, rebooted or given some kind of new life? Do they not wonder when we're all going to die so that they can get their own original stories as opposed to us just constantly recycling past ones?
I don't think they really pay that much attention to it.
Yeah, they're all on the Vine,
they're just like, I hear this was, you know, this was based on something from, you know, your time, you know, and they point to me, you know. So, I'm like, yeah, the original's better. I'm sorry.
I can't wait to hear the soundtrack for this movie.
What? An R&B version of Eye of the Tiger? That'd be awesome.
No, it'll be sung by Scott Stapp.
Wow. Wow.
It took Creed all the way.
Wow. Yeah, right?
Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, Eye of the Tiger.
Wow, do you realize the dude's homeless right now?
Yeah, he knows. That's why he brought it up.
All right.
Yeah. What? It's not like we put him there. We didn't build a box. He just moved in. It's not our fault. Wow, Brian really takes this seriously. I'm sorry, I didn't know you knew the guy.
It was God's fault.
Always is. Always is. Okay, well, the terrorists officially won. Sony has scrapped the theatrical release of The Interview, which was scheduled for Christmas Day this year. And I'm going to paraphrase this statement from Sony. I cut it down quite a bit. This is from Sony. In light of the decision by the majority of our exhibitors not to show the film The Interview, we have decided not to move forward with the planned December 25th theatrical release. Sony Pictures has been the victim of an unprecedented criminal assault against our employees, our customers, and our business. We are deeply saddened at this brazen effort to suppress the distribution of a movie and in the process do damage to our company, our employees, and the American public. We stand by our filmmakers and their right to free expression and are deeply disappointed by this outcome. P.S. We are also sorry about The Amazing Spider-Man 2. That last part I added.
Oh, but, okay.
So
it should have been there. Though.
It should have been there. Now, so Scott, what do you think about them? This has been going on for weeks. The Sony hack has caused a lot of problems. The hackers threatened physical violence this time. If the movie was shown in theater, several big chains were pulling the release, and the studio just said, we will pull it ourselves. It's done. Mm-hmm. What do you think about this?
Well, first off, it's just being pulled for Christmas Day when it was going to be released, right? It's not like it's
They're
never
pulling
gonna...
it from theatrical release.
So it's never going to hit the theater?
At this nope. time, yes.
Okay.
That could change. It could always change. But at this time, it's pulled completely.
This frustrates me kind of on both sides a little bit because I think I actually mentioned it when we first saw this trailer that I just think making a movie like this just seems like a bad idea, even if it's done and it's done for comedic effect and that kind of thing. It just seems in poor taste for to use a current living political figure and more or less you're poking the bear.
Threatening to kill him?
Right. You're poking the bear. And I understand we live in a society where you know, we need to be free to say what we want to say and that kind of thing. But sometimes I just feel people should just kind of take a step back and be like, you know, let's once in a while do something that's not going to piss a lot of people off. You know what I mean? I mean,
I do. And what's your second thought on that?
My second side of this is I don't like the idea that another country is dictating or having an influence on what's going to happen in our theaters. This is a movie. This isn't an outright attack on them. It's not like we're...
I bet South Korea is pretty tired of the same thing, too.
Yeah.
There's an argument there.
I feel like this is going to set a bad precedent, and we're going to see more things like this. It just gives me a really icky feeling. I don't know how else to describe it. It just...
Well, it's already having a ripple effect. They're canceling New Regency.
Mm-hmm.
They're canceling a Gore Verbinski movie with Steve Carell because it deals with North Korea, some sort of a thriller. They're not even just going to relocate the baddies to a different country. They're just saying we're scrapping it.
And
what do you think about that?
Well, until I saw that, the cynical side of me says that it's just a giant marketing ruse from Sony themselves.
It's brilliant.
I just think that it's probably a crappy movie. They don't want to shell out a whole lot of money. So they leak out some information themselves. They, you know, it's a big sham. So just so that we can get the media, the press, everybody, the Hollywood Outsider podcast talking about it.
You think that was
all the big ones, Saturday Night Live, everybody.
We were in the marketing plan?
Yeah, absolutely. It was in the meetings. I saw the email.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I forgot about
we
that.
We all saw the email.
Yeah.
Yep.
We weren't supposed to talk about it, though.
What is this, Fight Club?
True.
That was the subject line, Fight Club. Mm-hmm. Sony Fight Club.
So, I'm a little, whatever, a little suspicious.
What about you, Justin? I know you are a very keep art free. And well,
it's bullshit. I mean, the thing is, as far as I'm aware, we still don't know exactly who these who actually did this.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, people say it's the Guardians of Peace because of some similarities to previous attacks, but I've been watching the news a bit. I've not seen any confirmation that it's them. I've not seen any confirmation that's North Korea has said anything about this. It's like someone called a school threatening a bomb and so everybody's now been sent back home, but we don't know who it was. We don't know what the reasoning is. We just sent everybody home as opposed to sending in to figuring out the situation. Terrible analogy. It's bullshit. It's really bullshit. And so what are we going to do now? If all of a sudden the Taliban or ISIS gets a couple of hackers and they pull this shit, are we no longer going to have Middle Eastern bad guys, and if Putin or does it over in Russia, or we know at what point do we fucking stop letting bad people tell us what our art can and can't be about?
And I completely agree with you. My argument to that would be, you know, it isn't a right, it's a luxury. So I understand from the business perspective, I totally understand why the studio and the theaters feel like they have to pull it. Because if they release the movie and there is one single person, even if they're hurt unrelated to this, they're hurt because of that release, they'll be seen as a greedy corporate son of a bitch. And no good comes from that. If they do release it, you know, they're trying to be brave and whatnot, that they will be seen as greedy and whatnot. If they don't release it, they're seen as cowards. It's like they can't win. At least this way, they take the proactive chance of making sure that no one does get hurt just in case there is something. And it is a legitimate enemy. It's not like someone that just called in a bomb threat. A couple years ago, you had the shooting in Colorado. So a lot of theater chains are already nervous about the fact that there's even a possibility of a threat. So for them, I totally understand why the chains backed out. You know, they have to protect their number one concern is shareholders and patrons. That's their number one concern. It's not protecting the art. The art is owned by the studio. And the studio realized, hey, the major chains aren't going to carry it. And, you know, if we force this thing out, if something goes bad, we're going to be seen as the bad guy. So what good do they really gain by releasing it? I don't see a good reason for them to, from a studio perspective, based on the repercussions that have already happened.
Well, I think Justin's argument is integrity, or this kind of thing from happening more.
Integrity should never overcome fiscal concerns when you're a company.
Right.
No. Yeah. Why? I mean, if one person is hurt, I mean, is it worth it?
Absolutely not.
Can you imagine the backlash that they would have if there was, let's just say there was one bomb and 12, one person's killed and 12 other people, it was a small, you know, 12 other people are injured. You know, is it worth a crappy Seth Rogen movie?
Like I told Aaron earlier in the day, to me, the movie itself is almost unimportant. It's more the principle. It's not letting evildoers, quote unquote, dictate what we do and what we don't do. I mean, we're essentially giving this completely nebulous threat control of our lives and our companies, and we have shown the world that all you have to do is voice a threat. You don't even have to really back it up or show some kind of proof. You can just say from afar, hey, we'll do something bad. And then we're all going to fall to our knees and say, oh, shit, so sorry, so sorry. We're going to back off.
I wouldn't agree with that.
One of the points of art is to stand up to this bullshit.
I don't agree with that because they have actually backed it up for the last couple of weeks. That Sony hack is from...
But there's a big difference between hacking into a computer from afar and bombing an actual theater.
If you basically, essentially what they've done, and we don't want to spend too much time on this because we're supposed to be a fun podcast, not, you know, all dour, but this is an important topic. It's an important topic. You look at the Sony hacks, and for the last few weeks, they've been releasing information that have destroyed a company. They have really taken a company and just, they've slowly destroyed it, and they've made good on the threats that they've made. So when they make a physical threat of, we're going, you know, anybody that goes in the theater, the theater chains are going to regret it. That's a legitimate, they have to see that from a company standpoint as a legitimate threat to their patrons, therefore their shareholders. I get the whole artistic comment totally makes sense, but this isn't for something of real value to me. It's not gay marriage. It's not something that, you know, that people should stand up for. It's a Seth Rogen movie. They provoked, like Scott said, they poked that bear, and this is one of the repercussions of that. Should we all risk? What I'm saying is, if one person gets hurt, you're saying it's worth it to you for one person to get hurt because of your
I'm
mantra.
Saying that if a person goes into a theater knowing that what they're doing could put them at risk, and they decide, fuck those other people. I am not going to be cowed by it.
What about the people in other movies that have nothing to do with that theater, with that particular movie?
Okay, then at what point do we just shut down all theaters because some other dipshit may not like some other movie that comes out, and God forbid we all congregate in a location to watch those movies? And this isn't the first time we've poked bears. All during World War II, we had movies that had Hitler actors in them. We've had actors that have played Russian officials. Hell, we had Kim Jong-il
played by Hitler, a fucking puppet. Hitler wasn't the breaking point, into our fucking emails and shit.
But my fucking point is that once you start giving in to this kind of shit, it will never stop, ever. It will never stop, because once one person gets that validation of their threat, then any other asshole that knows how to hack a computer now becomes a potential global terrorist, and any movie they don't like will be trashed. And it's a bad precedent set.
I don't agree with it,
but I'm not the shareholder of
You've got to err on the side of safety at this stage. There's been too many
legitimate threats.
Shootings, there's been too many bombings, there's just too much crap in this world, and nowadays it's too easy to pull any of this stuff off, and you've got to say, you know what? I'd rather lose probably a little bit of money on this movie not showing up in the theater versus what if something happens. Now I've got some explaining to do why, after I was publicly threatened, everybody knew it was the potential for danger was there, and I still showed the movie, and now there's people dead.
You know what?
Now the victims' families own my giant movie theater business.
You know what scares
because I'm
me?
Just sued like a motherfucker right now.
Here's my fear. This whole story is just, it's like the big talk of today. It's like all I saw, like, on my Twitter feed and Facebook.
It's like
everything.
Y2K. Nothing happens.
Right. Here's my fear, though. I think that with all this talk, no matter what decision was made with this, somebody was going to get pissed off. You watch. Somebody is going to take this to the extreme one way or the other, however this ends up, and something's going to happen. And then what?
No, but see, here's the thing. It's not like people are going to stop going to the theater. I don't believe that because, right. You know, just several years ago, we just had that shooting in Colorado, and that was a huge deal, and people still went back to the theater. Mm-hmm. And I don't think art has been compromised here because the art, they took the chance, they made the movie. There is ramifications from taking that chance on that art. They're dealing with it from a studio perspective, but they did take that chance, and now they are dealing with those repercussions. But the art was made, so the art still stands. They have been respectful of their right to make their art. They do not owe them or anyone a national release. So from a company standpoint, they are just taking the right action for their film, for their studio.
There's a difference between a government saying you can't make that and either a consumer or someone that puts it out there and say, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to refuse that service.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
And the art's still there. People can still see the movie at some point. They'll get it out digitally or however they're going to do it. But they haven't said we'll never see the movie. They're just saying theatrically, we're not going to release it. It's not worth the risk.
Mm-hmm. But I also understand where Justin's coming from.
I understand all sides of it. It's one of those things where I don't really disagree with anybody. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you know, but it is what it is. By the way, do you remember when South Park?
There we go, people. We're all living in the United States of hostages, because that's what apparently we are. We're hostage to every motherfucker out there that's got a computer.
I don't agree with that. I think this is a unique circumstance, but we have different opinions.
Well, we'll see where we are in a year, and hopefully we're in a lot better place than I think we could be headed toward.
Now, back to what I was trying to say was, do you guys remember when South Park, their movie came out, and you had Saddam Hussein being basically a love slave with Satan.
To Satan?
That seemed to get
him. He wasn't a slave.
No, he was.
He liked it.
Yeah,
Satan,
he liked
Satan
it.
Satan was his bitch.
Yeah. He was all into it. See? We need to make more movies like that, where it's all about the love.
Yeah.
We turned this guy's dad, Kim Jong-il, into a fucking puppet.
So funny. Justin, your new book, A Broken Magic, is in stores now. If you guys had not bought it, it is available. It was available on his birthday, which is geniusly strategized.
Twice now.
Yeah, but the link is on the website. Are you excited about your book?
Yeah, I'm really proud of it. I think it's my one of my best, even going back and rereading, and I'm really proud of what I put together. And I think it, the cover looks great. The way the publisher put it together looks nice. And I hope people who have read A Minor Magic will pick it up. And if you haven't, well, damn it, now you got two books you got to pick up. All right, folks, we have got four. We have three movies to talk about this week, all of them opening up on December 25th, which happens to be Christmas Day. The first one, The Gambler. This one was directed by Rupert Wyatt, stars Mark Wahlberg, Jessica Lange, and John Goodman. Lit professor and gambler Jim Bennett's debt causes him to borrow money from his mother and a loan shark. Now, is his mother the loan shark, or is that a separate person? I don't know. There's no comma there. Uh-huh. Further complicating his situation is his relationship with one of his students. Will Bennett risk his life for a second chance? Aaron, tell me why I should give one shit about this movie, because currently I have zero fucks to give.
Wow. You really don't want to see it, huh?
It kind of came out of nowhere. It's about a subject I care less about.
Ask Scotty this one, because he was actually very excited about it till you poo-pooed it.
Yeah, I actually really like gambling movies, like Rounders or anything in a casino. I love movies about that. Even when they go wrong, that kind of turning thing is just really fun for me. I think Mark Wahlberg kind of looks badass in this movie too. I'm interested to see it. It can't be any worse than that Pain and Gain movie he did.
Not much can be worse than that.
So
I think it looks interesting. The acting looks strong. It's definitely an Oscar bait movie, and Justin doesn't like those. So that's what his.
Oh, that's bullshit.
It's true. It's kind of true.
I like plenty. I don't know. To me, the title's uninspired. The trailer to me looked very uninspired. There was like no build up to this movie being released that I'm aware, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but when it just comes out of nowhere and suddenly there's this trailer for a movie I didn't even know existed, I'm kind of like, okay, this is new. I don't like new. It's different. And it's about gambling, which as much as you like it, Scotty, I'm really not a big gambler movie guy.
Sure.
I don't know. This trailer's been out for a few weeks or so now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not like it just sprung up this week, but it's to a certain extent, I kind of agree with you. I almost know too much from the trailer. All I know is pretty much at this point is, you know, all I guess I don't know is how it ends, but I've got a pretty good idea. And I don't know if I want to rush out to see this, but I do want to see it. I like a lot of the actors and everything in it. It's just, you know, just looks like it's been done.
Yeah.
And it's based on a true story, so I'm assuming the guy's alive. So I'm assuming the guy, you know, I have to make the assumption that Mark Wahlberg doesn't die.
Mark Wahlberg looks good in it. John Goodman looks great in the trailer. Jessica Lange, I love her. And Rupert Wyatt is the director who did Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which I really liked. So
that's a lot of
a lot of quality involved. Yeah. So it's for me, that's enough to get me into the theater. Pedigree.
There you go. All right, next up, Into the Woods. A witch tasks a childless baker and his wife with procuring magical items from classic fairy tales to reverse the curse put on their family tree. Now, this is directed by Rob Marshall, and it stars a bevy of stars here, a constellation of stars. Anna Kendrick, Johnny Depp, Emily Blunt, Chris Pine, Meryl Streep, Lucy Punch, who I like quite a bit in some other movies. It's just got everybody. There's a lot of singing in it. And so, obviously, I've got to go to Brian.
Yeah.
Are you ready to get into the woods?
I do want to see this. I kind of like the mashup thing. It's I think it's more of a musical than what the trailer kind of implies.
Yeah. Isn't it one of the most well-known musicals of all time? I think it's a really big one.
It's a big one, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, this is based on a musical play. Mm-hmm. Broadway, gotcha. I think.
But I mean, if you didn't know any of that stuff and you just watched the trailer, you think, all right, there's probably a little bit of singing in this, but it kind of looks like you wouldn't think this is going to be filled with music.
No, yeah. Not from the trailer.
I don't think you would get that impression. But I do. I mean, there's again, I've mentioned him before. James Corden, I think, is a really good actor. I think he's when you see his comedy, he's hilarious. So I don't know how much of that we'll see in this, but I'm curious to see it. And looks really well done.
Wow, you guys are going to be shocked. I am really disinterested in seeing this.
Why?
I don't. Nothing about it. It does. It's all the parts seem perfect. Anna Kendrick's in it, for God's sakes. I like.
She's so pretty, yeah, according to you guys.
I don't know that. I've not seen a trailer that just really has sold me on anything. I mean, I feel like I'm going to wind up seeing it, but probably not in the theater. I hope I'm pleasantly surprised. Maybe when I hear Justin's review on it or something, or your review, maybe it'll put me over. But I'm just. I don't know. I'm just kind of lukewarm about it.
You know what's funny is I don't think Anna Kendrick is as gorgeous as you morons seem to think.
Yeah. You said that many times.
But
you're crazy.
But I think she's extremely talented, and she has a great voice. And I love Meryl Streep. I don't care how uncool that makes me. She's one of the best actresses of all time. Mm-hmm. The fact that you have those two in the movie will get me into a theater. Johnny Depp playing dress up is about the only thing that really makes me nervous because that has gotten so old. It's almost exhausting. Mm-hmm. But I really want to see it. I like musicals. I just don't like Les Mis, where they make you want to kill yourself when it's over. I don't like those musicals.
It doesn't look bright and sunshiny.
But it looks.
Yeah, but when the whole conversation is a song, you know. If you sing a song and you kind of set up, I don't know, a theme or something going on for the next scene, fine. Then you have some talking, then you have another song, fine. But when you sing and everybody's dancing and everything, and then the quote unquote conversation is more song, I get tired of that shit.
Okay, close-minded. I'm
no, I get I, what he's saying.
I get
no,
what he's saying, but that's to me, it's
know,
a musical.
Nothing about it.
You know it going in. It's a musical, and that is a possibility. So for me, if I know that going in, okay, and I need to adapt. And if I like it, I like it. If I don't, I don't. I like it, the atmosphere. It looks very atmospheric. It looks very modern, yet a little Tim Burton-esque, I guess. Old Tim Burton, so a little gothic, I guess. And I really want to hear. I've heard great things about the actual score and the soundtrack, and I just think it looks good.
I think it looks fine. I'm sure I'll go see it in the theater. I am a huge fan of Anna Kendrick. I love Emily Blunt. I think Chris Pine looks fucking ridiculous in this movie, especially when you compare him to the Prince Charming that's going to be in the live-action Cinderella film with Robb Stark. Where he looks perfect in the role. He makes Chris Pine look even sillier. But yeah, I mean, I'm really kind of curious to see this one. I'm not a huge musical fan. There are some I like, some I don't, but I've not seen this or heard any of these songs. So I get to go in really fresh and with virgin ears, and I'm looking forward to it.
There you go.
All right, last and perhaps least, if you look at the Rotten Tomato rating for this movie at 50%.
Ooh.
Unbroken.
Ooh.
This is the Angelina Jolie directorial Oscar bait film. Yet with that tomato meter reading, I'm not so sure it's as good as she thinks it is, or as the trailer would lead you to think. After a near-fatal plane crash in World War II, Olympian Louis Zimpirini, spends a harrowing 47 days in a raft with two fellow crewmen before he's caught by the Japanese Navy and sent to a prison of war camp. This one stars Jack O'Connell, Takamasa Ishihara, Domhnall Gleeson. Jai Courtney is in this?
Can you do Jai Courtney with an Asian accent? Well, if Jai Courtney's in it, there you go. If he's in it, then you know why the rating's so low.
Oh, man.
That's a pretty sound logic.
But yeah, I was shocked at the negative reviews and just general conversation around this movie. I figured this was headed right for Oscars, and yet doesn't seem to. But Scotty, I don't know. What do you think about this? Are you going to break and see it, or are you going to?
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
No, I was not really interested in this when we first talked about this trailer. It looks like it's going to be very uplifting and that kind of thing, but just it's trying too hard to make me feel that. I don't know. I'm real tired of this. It looks like it's one of those movies that feels like it could be told in like an hour and 15 minutes and they're going to stretch it out to 2.5. I don't even know what the runtime is, to be honest with you, but it feels like it's going to be halfway through the movie before he even gets to this concentrate.
Shorter than a Hobbit movie, I'm sure.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? It looks like they're going to just take their time with it. I get that impression.
I don't know. I mean, the guy's an Olympian. He goes to war. He ends up lost at sea for 45 days, only to be rescued by the Japanese and then spend the next few years in a concentration camp. I don't know if you could exactly tell all of that in an hour and 45 minutes.
I agree. 100%.
Yeah.
I'm with Brian. I really don't care what the tomato score is. The trailer looks fantastic. It's a really horrifying story. I will give it its due in the theater, and I will decide for myself if it's a great film or if it's only a middling film. It really depends. But yeah. I will not let a score detour me on this one. The trailer was too good, and I love the story.
I normally, 9 times out of 10, I would agree with you on that. I usually don't go to Rotten Tomatoes because I usually don't give a shit. Because the kinds of movies I like normally get bad scores. But this movie looks like it's one of those that is designed exactly to please the reviewers for these kinds of films. And so for it not to have done that, I don't know if it's a case of it being that bad, or maybe it's just a bunch of reviewers kind of overreacting negatively to something that they think is maybe too squarely aimed at them. I don't know, but I've the trailer sold me, but the reception to this film has very much cooled my desire to see this Christmas day. I'm gonna have to wait and hear some common folk reviews, probably yours, Aaron, before I decide whether or not I want to go out to a theater and check this one out.
Brian, did you want to see it?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't live off of Rotten Tomato scores or any other things like that. I mean, I'll take it into account to a certain extent, but the story sounds fantastic and really looks like a motivational type movie. So I'm going to give it its fair due, but I'll be objective about it regardless.
I will say, in all fairness, though, movie good or bad, this man's life looks extraordinary. I give all due respect to this man and what he endured, what he accomplished.
Absolutely.
I know we'd all, if our boat capsized, we'd just let it, we just drown.
I just would have let the sharks eat me. And
mine would have been a short film.
Brian could have done it in 30 seconds.
There wouldn't have been an Olympian scene for sure.
And Brian was in the Coast Guard.
Cut all that out.
There's also another few movies coming out, but we're just going to briefly mention them. First up, American Sniper, which is the film with Bradley Cooper starring as a real-life sniper who I guess he's credited with the most kills in American military history.
Mm-hmm.
There's also Selma, which is the story of Martin Luther King and the March on Selma. Is it Selma?
Mississippi.
Mississippi, mm-hmm. Okay. And Big Eyes, which is a new Tim Burton film about a woman who paints paintings, falls in love, and decides, hey, guy I love, you can take credit for these, only to later on say, I'd like that back, please.
Yep, pretty much. That's a good summing up.
There you go. Well, of these three films that we did discuss, The Gambler, Into the Woods, and Unbroken, which one are you guys most likely to head out to a theater and check out, Brian?
Unbroken.
Scotty?
The Gambler.
Aaron?
Unbroken.
And I'm going to go with Into the Woods. So we've got all three of them covered.
Hey. But I really want to see all the other three that we didn't really talk about. Those actually,
American Sniper looks so fucking good.
It does. Yeah. It does. It's probably going to be one of those where it gets a limited release and then it comes out wider in January.
Like the weekend before.
Probably something. Box office. Really, The Hobbit is just now out, and then it's made like $120 million overseas already. It just now is coming to theaters in the U.S. But last weekend, Exodus, Gods and Kings opened, and Moses could only muster $24.1 million. That may seem good. It's really not that great. That's pretty small for a December release. $6,884 theater average. The theater average was actually higher for Top 5, which is the Chris Rock movie. It opened at number four with 6.8 million. In between, you got Hunger Games: Mockingjay with 12.6 for 276 million, and Penguins of Madagascar 7.2 for 58 million. That's a huge flop. Huge flop. There will not be a Penguins of Madagascar 2.
These penguins didn't soar, huh?
They did not. They did not.
What's this movie?
What's this movie? Each week we play ours or a listener suggested clip from a movie. And if you think you know the clip, you email us feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. And next week we'll give you a proper host shout out. We don't have a normal show next week, so you won't get a proper host shout out. But I'll try to remember to get everybody when we come back. So last week's answer was Scott's pick, and it was Gross Point Blank. Those that got it correct, Tommy Lynch, Ryan Schuerman, John Davenport, and Sean St. Clair. So congratulations, guys. Now we have a clip from one of our listeners, actually. Dustin Baker sent this in. He wants to see if you guys can guess his clip. Apparently it's one of his favorites. So here you go. Here's a clip. Remember, if you think you know what it is, email us feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. And in a couple weeks when we come back, we will give you a proper host shout out. Here's your clip.
Of course. Thank you. I understand all that.
Freddie, love, I'm telling you, I don't know. I don't think the author knows. I don't know why the author came into this industry in the first place. I don't know why any of us came into it.
All the same, if you could just give me a reason, I could keep in my mind.
All right, I'll give you a reason. You carry those groceries into the study, Freddie, honey, because it's just slightly after midnight, and we're not going to be finished before we open tomorrow night. Correction. Before we open tonight!
All right, that one was a hard one, so you guys might want to Google away. Try to figure that one out. Now let's go to reviews. We review any new releases. First one up is Exodus, Gods and Kings. It stars Christian Bale as Bat Moses, and it tells the story of Moses and his freeing of the slaves from Ramesses, who's played by Joel Edgerton. After Moses is exiled, God speaks to him in an oddly spoilery way, so I can't really tell you how he speaks to him, but they don't do that husky voiceover that they did in the Ten Commandments, nor does Morgan Freeman pop up. It's really...
Well, I'm calling bullshit.
Was it Alanis Morissette?
No, I wish it would have been Alanis Morissette. That would have been genius.
Was it Benedict Cumberbatch?
It was not.
Because he's voicing everything.
He is, and that would probably just up his geek cred to astronomical levels. Well, God tells him to head back and free his people, the Hebrew slaves, and since Ramesses is all like, no way, I'm not going to do it, God sets a wave of deadly plagues until he's forced to comply. Acting-wise, everybody's fine. Bale is pretty good as Moses. Charlton Heston did it better, though. Edgerton's Ramesses is a little overdone. And Sigourney Weaver, who's here, is like a cameo. I mean, she really has like four lines total, which was really odd. And the king, the one who raised Moses and Ramesses, is played by John Turturro, which is really weird.
The Jesus?
The Jesus plays the king. Yeah.
It was let me touch your feet.
Yeah. Acting's fine. It just never shines. The story tries to dabble a little bit in whether or not the godly parts are explainable, I think is the right way to say it. So, you know, where Moses...
like Mythbusters or
kinda,
something?
Kind of, man. A little bit. Where Moses is hearing, we're talking to God... Joshua is played by Aaron Paul. It's played, you know, yo, bitch. Moses, bitch. He sees him, and he sees him talking to no one. And so he thinks Moses is losing his mind. So is he really just crazy and he doesn't actually talk to God? I mean, there's kind of that implication. They try to kind of explain why the sea would realistically turn blood red. It ends up being ridiculous, but... that's what Ridley Scott's trying to do. I appreciated the attempt to try to appeal to Christians and atheists alike. It just didn't make any sense.
Did they explain how it parted?
No, that one's a little hard to explain. But basically, it looks like it didn't so much part as it receded. So
it's a hairline.
Yeah, essentially.
It receded in the middle?
Yes, receded in the middle. No, and I can't explain it without telling you something about the movie I don't want to tell you. The only thing saving this movie for me is that it looks stunning. It is beautifully shot. The cinematography is beautiful. The effects are great. The 3D is even really well done. Like, I accidentally went to the 3D version because I got the time wrong and ended up really liking it. Ridley Scott.
The locusts really coming at your face.
They were just like, bam, I gotcha. And the frogs were hopping all up in my lap. Ridley Scott, always been a really smart visual director. Here is no different. Unfortunately, the story is weak. Pacing drags on way too long, much like my own review. If $10 is the full price of admission, Exodus is worth $5, but that is only if you see it in a theater. Because if you miss it in the theater, I probably wouldn't even bother. It's a movie that visually looks great. It's really impressive visually, but that's all it has going for it.
Really?
Yeah, kind of. Christian, the first half is really interesting, and then it goes crazy. I can't explain without telling you the God thing, and the God thing was really dumb.
Oh,
really dumb.
Oh, it was bad. I thought you were saying
it's dumb. Good. Very dumb.
Are you calling God dumb?
No, I'm calling how they present God dumb.
Oh, okay. I didn't make sure.
Now let's go into a couple of regular reviews. Justin, you and Brian both saw The Hobbit, Battle of the Five Armies. Tell me, what is The Hobbit about?
Well, I just got back from seeing it, so it's still really fresh. That may, if I don't have the luxury of a couple of days to let it calm down in my brain a bit. But yes, this is Hobbit, Battle of the Five Armies. Most likely the final Peter Jackson Middle Earth film, unless, God forbid, some J.R.R. Tolkien cache of manuscripts is unearthed somewhere, because Jesus, they have done just about everything shy of going back to the first age or something and pulling even more from the Silmarillion. Directed by Peter Jackson, written by Fran Walsh, Philippa Boyens, Peter Jackson, and Guillermo del Toro. This one stars, as the past ones have, with Ian McKellen, Martin Freeman, Richard Armitage, William Kircher, Stephen Hunter, just a constellation of stars.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, now with these films being what they are, they're always epic. They're large in scope. The Hobbit, everybody was confused when they said they were going to do a trilogy of films based on a book, which is really kind of a
pamphlet.
Like Hobbits.
Pamphlet. It's a pamphlet.
Like a pamphlet. It's, you know, small in stature.
Mm-hmm.
Not much to it, yet somehow they did find elements to add into this and stretch it out. Do you feel like the story that was told in The Five Armies, was it a fitting end not only to The Hobbit, but also to Peter Jackson's take on Middle Earth? Or was it a little too much, scraped across too much bread?
I kind of feel that it was probably spread a little too thin. I wanted more.
Longer movie?
There wasn't enough in this?
You want another movie? We could make another one. Peter Jackson will do it for us.
There were characters that I felt didn't need to be in the movie.
Oh, gotcha.
I felt Smaug is probably the most engaged. I love Smaug, especially in 3D. Looks fantastic. But really, everything after that just felt like it could have been done better. The battle of the actual five armies. You if you compare Return of the King, you shouldn't. But let's face it, we're basically two armies, three if you want to count. Yeah, you could probably even go with three. So now we were talking five. Should be almost twice as good, and it's not.
No,
it's in the damn title. All right, Battle of the Five Armies. It should pretty much be 2 solid hours. Of some really cool fighting. And I just felt like I was let down. I enjoyed the movie. I'm glad it's done. I'm glad it's over. I want to have a break for 10, 20 years at least. I don't feel like we've had long enough to really cherish these movies. I can still watch the Lord of the Rings movies. You know, they still, for me, hold up. I'm getting there with the Hobbit movies.
Smaug's character's resolution in this film, I really felt like should have happened at the ending of the second one. It really didn't do much in this film. And that character of this massive dragon, I think, should have had all of his story finished in the second film. But after that, once the five armies start coming together and this battle commences, I thoroughly enjoyed the action sequences. There is a cameo, I'm not going to say who appears, But there is an actor cameo that as soon as I heard his voice, I just cheered.
You won't know him by looking at him, but his voice is very, very distinct.
Can't wait.
Very distinctive, and it's fantastic. But I completely agree with you. There were far too many characters in this. There was too much stuff going on that really should have been on the editing room floor. I think that they could have put in much more interesting material in its place, or hell, maybe not make it 2.5 hours, maybe actually cut it down to 2. But all in all, I enjoyed what this film had to bring. I thoroughly enjoyed the story that they told, and I'm actually glad that The Hobbit as a series of films was given more weight, because I think that a lot of what's happening here, when you go on to watch Lord of the Rings, either for the first time or watch it again, I think you're going to get more out of it than you would have had these films not been made. But, you know, this is a Peter Jackson film. It's always going to have a big cast of stars. What did you think about the performances overall? Were there any that you just felt fell flat, or that really surprised you with just how good it was?
I think Lee Pace, this is a movie that makes me actually jump to Aaron's side of the fence with Lee Pace.
He's not that great an actor, is he?
No, he's not.
Yeah.
And I fought you on that with Guardians of the Galaxy, and you know, that was I try to give him like kind of the benefit of the doubt and everything, but this just kind of proved he's just not a good actor. Martin Freeman, to me, acting wise he's the heavyweight. Armitage, he was pretty good. He's better in this than I think some of the other stuff I've seen him in. But overall, I mean, they were all serviceable, and just not. But again, it's not really one of those things you're not expecting to be blown away by acting performances, as long as they're good enough that is well good enough.
Yeah, that they don't hinder the production.
Right.
Well, but you know, I got to say, that's one of the reasons I don't want to compare it to Return of the King, because I felt like so many performances in Return of the King were so fucking awesome. I mean, Viggo was so incredible in his performance as Aragorn. The Hobbits were also good. And yet in this film, I didn't really feel like there was a character that was as compelling and powerful and strong as Viggo Mortensen was. But I don't know why I see this so differently. I completely disagree. I think Lee Pace is fantastic.
I
loved his performance as this Elven King, because he is so high and mighty. He is so I'm better than you. And he plays that Elven quality to the hilt in this film. And I thoroughly enjoyed every scene he was in, and I thought he and Orlando Bloom played fairly well off of each other as father and son.
And I'll get into the Orlando Bloom thing when we do the Hobbit spoiler cast later. Yeah.
But we'll have up next week, so you can, I think around Christmas Day, you can look for that.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I won't get to be part of that.
You'll be in the Bahamas.
Yeah, I'll be in the Caribbean. Hopefully get my pirate on. What about the look of the film, though? These are, you know, Peter Jackson's films are known as beautiful films, sometimes maybe a little too pretty. But what did you think of the look? What did you think of the special effects?
The special effects, there was no real distractions with noticing maybe makeup or whatever, I think, which was one of the issues with some of the higher frame rates or something earlier. Mm-hmm. But it looked like it had the same feel, same tone as the others. It still felt like it was part of it.
Yeah, I mean, it looks seamless with Lord of the Rings. I loved a lot of the new creatures that they brought into the battles. All in all, just a beautiful looking film. I have to say, though, that the score, I almost don't even remember the music from it. And maybe that's because it's been basically the same music for 6 films, and it's just kind of bled into the background at this point. It's always good, but I don't remember it as much as I did when you first heard a lot of the themes in Lord of the Rings. But all in all, beautiful film. Peter Jackson, incredible direction. On a scale of $1 to $10, what would you give this?
I'm going to give it 7.5. 7.5. Like I said, most of my comments are fairly negative. I realize that. I recognize that. I'll own that. but it's still Lord of the Rings. I love the Hobbitses. I love, you know, I love this whole franchise. I still soak it up. I still walked out of the movie smiling and enjoying it. Again, I had my nitpicky stuff, but that's just me.
Yeah, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. I really wish I could have scored it higher. I think the second film for me is the best of the trilogy of the three for this one. It just felt like it spent a little too much time with characters they didn't care about. It opened with a scene that really should have been the ending of the second film. But I did love the ending of this movie. I won't say anything more than that. I think it's a perfect ending, and I cannot wait to one day watch all six movies. I don't know if I could do it in one day. I'll probably just split it. Hobbit one day, Lord of the Rings the next, but I can't wait to do that one day.
Just bring in a porta potty and
just put on, you know, some Depends.
Yeah, there
get about you go. A gallon drink,
or get a potty chair. Get
trash
a potty
can
chair.
Of popcorn.
There you go. Get a
just
potty
have you a couple of, you know, empty milk jugs sitting there next to you.
Yeah,
trucker jugs.
Trucker jugs.
We also saw, Scott and I saw What We Do in the Shadows. Now, Jason Taylor is one of our listeners, and he suggested this. And it's a movie that comes out in February. It is about three vampires that are rooming together, and they're just basically getting by on life. While a documentary crew follows them around, a way that I explained it was, if you watch Modern Family, it would be like Dracula showed up. You know,
yeah, that's a really good way to say it.
It's kind of like that. The main characters are Viago, Vlad, and Deacon. They also have Peter, who is basically Nosferatu, who lives in the basement, and he barely ever comes out. And it's basically a camera crew just follows them around, and they play it as in, we're vampires, but hey, this is a normal life. They still have the old duds, and they stand out, but they have all the vampire tropes, and they have everything else, and it's interesting. We'll get into it a little bit. But it's written and directed and starring the guys from Flight of the Conchords, Jermaine Clement and Taika Waititi. I think I hope it's
Taika
Waititi.
Waititi.
Nice. It's really interesting. Scott, what did you think of the story? Because I found it to be like a mishmash of found footage flicks, vampire films, and mockumentaries.
Well, you showed me the trailer for this first, and I was like, this looks like a great trailer that is going to be a better trailer than it was a movie.
Yeah, like a joke is going to wear thin really quick.
And we went into it, and because there's really not a whole lot of brand new ideas in it, it just seems like a big combination of a lot of different ideas that we've seen before in movies mashed into one. It had just a recipe for disaster, kind of, but I still wanted to check it out. I was pleasantly surprised. It really did it did that a lot better than I expected. It was kind of this. They kind of played on that same joke throughout, and there was some dry spots where I was like, all right, let's get going. But it was legitimately funny. Like, some hilarious one-liners and just some random stuff that happens that
the explanation for what a virgin is like might be my funniest line in a movie in years.
We both guffawed.
I'm not even going to say what it is because it will take you by surprise, and you will go, what just happened? And you have to rewind it. It is one of those where they do a very good job of taking a one joke premise and making it a movie, which I was shocked because I really didn't think it was going to work. And they even incorporate werewolves, zombies. And I like how they play everybody like they're real people almost. I mean, this is, you know, zombies just like, all right, what's up? You know, and the werewolves are having attacks from the moons. I mean, it's just little things that it does throughout the film that are very, very clever. They introduce a couple friends, Nick and Stu, who are regular people, and they kind of come into this world. So they kind of play the audience to a degree, you know, in this world. And it's just, it's really fun.
The characters are very, very well realized. They each have their own individual characters that stand out so well. In a really good way, the main character, the guy that's kind of like running the show or whatever.
Viago.
He's like a ditz, but he's also charming at the same time. Like almost in like
he doesn't realize he's a bloodsucker.
Right. He's just so matter of fact about the fact that he's a vampire. Like everyone that's watching should just get it. There's no like explanation of, you know, he just goes with the assumption that everyone that's watching this knows everything about vampires, which mm-hmm. we all kind of do at this point, considering the movies. But it's just so matter of fact. So, yep, this is the way it is. No big deal. Yeah. And
this is me gutting this lady. And then you've got the Deacon. He's kind of like the young hip vampire. I don't know if that's named after Deacon Frost from Blade or what, but it's very similar to that character. And then you got Vlad, who he's the guy that he's the manipulative vampire. You know, the guy that can charm you and hypnotize you. Although he's lost his luster, so now he basically hypnotizes old men.
Yeah, he thinks he's a lot sexier than he is, kind of thing. And that joke works a lot in this film.
That's very, very funny. And it comes out next February, but we wanted to review it now. Scott, what did you think overall?
Overall, I was surprised at how much I did like it. I still think there was some... It dragged on a little bit in the final third. With the stuff with the werewolves just seemed to go on just a little bit too long, and I got a little weird. Mm-hmm. But overall, I would highly recommend it. This is one of those, unexpected surprises. I wouldn't call it a fantastic movie, but I still really enjoyed it and laughed many, many times. If $10 were the full price of admission, I'd give it $6.
Okay. I really liked it, too. I was pleasantly surprised. If $10 is the full price of admission, I'd give it $7. And definitely recommend it. I think it's going to be a cult flick where people are just going to be talking about it, but I don't know if it's going to have mainstream success.
And some pretty cool special effects, by the way, too, considering it seems very low budget.
Yeah, when they have vampire fights, and they're just, like, it's a documentary, and they're just jumping in the air. That's pretty funny. It's pretty funny.
And just hiss at each other.
Yeah, they hiss. And they flip, exactly, and they turn into bats, and it plays great.
It does.
At one point when they just, I'm like, did they really just pull that off? Because I thought this is a $5 movie, mm-hmm. and they did a great job. Let's go to video on demand and Blu-ray, Scott.
We got a few releases on a couple different days. First up, we've got on December 30th, The Equalizer. This is the Denzel Washington movie that Aaron reviewed back on episode 160.
Really dug it.
A man believes he has put his mysterious past behind him and has dedicated himself to beginning a new quiet life. But when he meets a young girl under the control of ultra-violent Russian gangsters, he can't stand idly by. He
has
to help
her. Are there any other kind of Russian gangsters?
Mm-mm. Nope. That's it. One kind.
We got kind of the ultra-violence kind of a given.
Look, we got North Korea already pissed off at us. Why don't we not – let's leave the Russians alone.
I'll bring it on, Putin. I ain't afraid of you. Just because you work out, yeah, I run.
You and your goons.
Aaron gave that one a 750. We've also got Stephen King's A Good Marriage. After 25 years of a good marriage, what will Darcy do once she discovers her husband's sinister secret? That one stars Joan Allen. That actually sounds kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. So, January 6th has a couple as well. The first is The Guest. Aaron gave this one a glowing $9 out of $10.
Love that movie.
Back in episode 157. This is one you got to see over at South by Southwest, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly.
Yep.
It's available on iTunes right now. Should I get it?
I love it. If you like 80s throwbacks, yes. It is. It feels like it was made in 1985.
Hmm.
Cool. Freaking fantastic.
A soldier introduces himself to the Peterson family, claiming to be a friend of their son who died in action. After the young man is welcomed into their home, a series of accidental deaths seems to be connected to his presence.
I'm sorry, the what family?
The Peterson family.
I get it now.
It's my life story.
Now you know why he liked it so much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the girl's pretty cute, too.
The next one is Boyhood. This is the life of a young man, Mason, from age 5 to 18. This is the one where they actually filmed it over the course of the 13 years.
It's a great movie.
And that's such a ballsy move, really, to start with a 5-year-old kid. You don't know he's going to be an actor. Mm-hmm. I totally want to check this out. It's also got Patricia Arquette, Ethan Hawke. You said you did see it, right?
I did see it. I saw it long after it came out. But I don't recommend seeing it in a theater because it is really long.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a great movie to watch and just see how he realized that, knowing this behind the scenes that he took the years to make. It's just it's beautifully put together.
I got two more quick ones. Next is Get On Up. This is a chronicle of James Brown's
rise.
Right,
man. Get on up. Yeah.
James Brown's rise from extreme poverty to become one of the most influential musicians in history. Stars Chadwick Boseman, probably my favorite performance of the year so far, legitimately.
Wow.
On episode 152, I gave it a 650. It's worth checking out just to see his performance. He looks like James Brown reincarnated, so... No Good Deed on episode 158. We talked about this one. Aaron gave it a $7 out of 10.
Guilty pleasure. Not a great movie, but a fun thriller.
An unstable escaped convict terrorizes a woman who is alone with her two children. This one stars Idris Elba and Taraji Henson. And that looks like that's all we've got. There's nothing major on video on demand. So,
again, I think we can do the unstable math on the escaped felon.
Yep.
That's kind of implied.
It's implied that he's probably going to do some damage.
Probably.
Probably. He's not there for hugs.
All right, now it's time for the first.
Wait, hang on. This would be a screenplay we need to write. Escape felon, escape Russian gangster, shows up at a house and helps raise kids. And gives hugs. And
wasn't
life
Day?
Lessons.
Yeah, wasn't that Labor Day released on Valentine?
It was. Yeah, probably it was.
With lasers.
Josh Brolin did it.
With lasers. There you go.
Oh, now you got my interest.
You put lasers in anything.
On their frickin' head.
Hey, you like those lasers in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang? Remember when that when that was in there?
Mm-hmm. It was good.
They use lightsabers.
They do.
All right, now it's time for the portion of our show where we like to have a little bit of fun. Longtime listeners of the show will remember our segments like recasting the classics, flashbacks, the hoe off, and others. We like to rotate these segments every week, and this week we're coming back to Stump the Hoe. This is where one of our hoes asks a trivia question in an attempt to stump his fellow hoes as well as those of you listening. And it's Brian's turn. So, Brian, stump us.
All righty. This one's a little bit different. Which actress is hiding behind Zeus's throne in one of the scenes from the Clash of the Titans remake?
Oh, okay.
Is it Emma Thompson, Maggie Smith, Helen Mirren, or Tilda Swinton?
I'll go Tilda Swinton.
I was going to do the same.
Fuck it, Tilda Swinton.
Wrong. It's Emma Thompson.
I'll go really? Emma Thompson.
She was filming Nanny McPhee, and they were at a neighboring studio or set on the, at the studio. She was visiting her friend Liam Neeson, and I guess some couple of the other guys having a good time. I think they, even they were sitting around drinking, and all of a sudden, director's like, "Hey, all right, time to start shooting," and they're like, "Oh shit!" So
this
had
is
a
how
quick little shot, and basically they said, "Just hide behind the chair." She did. They shot the scene, and that was it. So she is actually in Clash of the Titans.
I want to hear Liam Neeson go, "Oh shit, time to record, time to film."
Oh shit.
All right, now we go to From the Outside In. This week, the topic is the worst movie ever. We have glossed over bad movies before in different ways, but listener Scott Calgaro emailed us a while back to say
Scotch.
That... Yeah, Scotch. Scotch is he's better
say
known.
Say it right.
He wanted to say that we've never actually said what we consider the worst movie ever made. A lot of critics, IMDb lists, they'll throw out The Room, they'll throw out some Uwe Boll movie, but this is our own personal choice. Now, before we name our personal picks, I want to know what scientific formula did you use to determine what constitutes the absolute worst movie of all time to you?
For me, it's not a matter of production quality or value. It is purely based on what movie slapped me in the face the hardest, whether it's a disappointment, whether it's, you know, being offended, whatever. It's got nothing to do with how much money was on the screen or how much it made at the box office. It has everything to do with when I left, was I angry?
Scott?
That kind of goes with it. I didn't really have a hardcore formula like you said, but...
No, you should get an Excel spreadsheet.
And, yeah, carry the one.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
For me, it's... Where I just see lots of laziness or in acting or in sets, that kind of thing. If a movie is so bad that I find entertainment in it, in its badness, I don't consider that a worst movie of all time. Mm-hmm. I look at something that, like Justin said, I felt jilted out of my $10 or whatever I paid for it at that point. Like where I considered asking my money back because this is just a complete waste of time.
I agree. You know, The Room is a prime example of that. If you've ever seen it, it's so bad, but it's entertaining to watch with friends because mm-hmm. it's so funny, you know. And what about
and
you?
They even show that at small theaters and stuff, and you know, every at little film fest or something like that, don't they?
Yeah, they do. In Chicago, actually.
Yeah, all over the place, man. All over. That is
and
a,
he actually shows
it's now
up.
A classic.
Yeah, he actually shows up because he still claims to this day that he made it bad on purpose.
I'm sure he did. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I sure wouldn't say I was going for art.
Yeah, just like whenever you trip over something and you stumble and you catch yourself before you really fall, you're just like, oh, hey, I meant to do that.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Brian? What did you use to determine this?
pretty much kind of in line with the others. It's just one of those things where you maybe your expectations might have been one thing, and then but what you got was so far different from that that you just you feel offended. You feel like, you know, somebody pissed in your Wheaties or something. It's just one of those things where you just it may not necessarily be the film quality. You know, if it's got some things wrong with it, fine. You know, maybe production quality is not great. Maybe the acting isn't top notch, but okay. There's some good things about it, but it's just one of those things where it's probably just expectations. Just not only not being lived up to, which I can handle that. It's just when you not just live up to them, but just go so far to the left or right field with it that it's just utterly ridiculous. So
yeah, for me, it's not really the poorly made movies because there's a lot of hack directors and low budgets that cause a lot of that. Usually it doesn't bother me nearly as much as when a movie has kind of everything going for it. Like they have talent, they have, you know, and in front of the camera and behind the camera. And then it just
marketing. I mean, they've got everything.
Yeah. And then it just, for some reason, becomes shards of glass in my eyes. And I just, you know, my pick is the epitome of that. It's not low budget. It's not a hack director. I mean, there's a lot of talent involved. It's just what they put on the screen makes me visibly want to punch babies. And I don't, that's how I determine what a worst movie is. It doesn't have to be just a crappy made movie. There's a lot of crappily made movies. I'd never be able to pick one out of that lot. I mean, shit. Movie of Bowl has a whole section of crappy movies that are awful. How would you pick just one? How do you pick a best out of that? That's my argument. So here we go. We've arrived at the moment that some people wanted us to get to. And we're going to talk about listener picks, which there's some great ones in there. But there are no honorable mentions here. Nobody gets a three or four options. What is your pick for the worst film ever made? Brian, you can go first.
The one that came to mind, and even though I tried to think of other ones, it just stayed there, was Alexander.
With Colin Farrell?
With Colin Farrell, exactly. It was expectations. It's one of my favorite historical characters. I was glad to finally see a movie that did a good job of portraying, you know, his life and, you know, some good acting, some cool effects, kind of thinking Gladiator or something. I don't know, you know, but it just, it was atrocious. It was just absolutely atrocious. Just everything. It was like somebody was given the keys to a Ferrari and they turned it into a monster truck.
Wow. That's an interesting analogy.
It works. It's, you know, hey, it in some ways it kind of looks good. But you really fucked up.
All right. Anything more you want to say about Alex? I can't. That's not one I can even debate with you, man, because it's a horrible movie. I watched it once and I was mad.
Rosario Dawson naked is the best thing in that movie.
That was definitely a plus.
So there's the silver lining. But you got to wait an hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours before you even see that.
I'm surprised. Justin's got it time stamped, but... Okay, and Scotty, what about you? What's your worst movie ever?
My worst one is one I actually saw in the theater, and it's one of the only times I actually considered, like I said, going up and asking for my money back, because I just felt so dumb that I had wasted my time and money to see this movie. Back in 2000, Battlefield Earth. Because it looked kind of cool, and it had... You know,
did it though? Shoot, it had John Travolta in.
Yeah, John Travolta is an alien, and Barry
it's
Pepper.
It's not a bad book. The book is good.
Mm-hmm. And I just, it was just so awkward, and nothing made any sense, and I felt disgusted walking out of that movie. Like, what did I just see?
Did you make it through to the end?
I did. I've never walked out of a movie.
Ah, because you're like, I paid for it.
Mm-hmm. No, I take that back. I've said before that I walked out of movies, so that's not true, but I did not walk out of this one for sure.
That's too bad. Battlefield Earth gets... is it Battlefield Earth?
No, it's actually Earth.
What about you, Justin? What's your word? I can't argue. See, so far I got nothing I can debate.
For me, I think I've mentioned it on here before. In fact, I'm pretty sure I have. But it's Ultraviolet. It has, and the reason I consider it the worst movie of all time is because the film Kurt Wimmer made prior to that was such an amazing film, in my opinion. Equilibrium is an amazingly well done film, and Christian Bale was so good in it. And from the trailer, everything about Ultraviolet looked like it's hitting all of my, you know, geek pleasure buttons. Vampires, check. You know, cool soup, you know, power armor, check. Swords, check. Hot chick, check. It's got everything. But you get into the movie and then it's suddenly too many ideas shoved into one movie with lackluster performances by just about everybody involved. And frankly, I don't even know if there was a director. I mean, was he there? Was he just, you know, viewing the shit from home? What exactly happened? But I was so gutted and disappointed by what I saw that it, to this day, it makes me mad just to think about it. And I tried watching it again at home on video, just thinking maybe I had a bad day, and it made me even more mad. It's terrible from beginning to end.
Is there
terrible?
Even Mila Jovovich didn't help.
Oh, she's so hot. But even she could not save that film. Nope. Terrible. Kurt Wimmer, terrible. You owe me money and time.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, I get that. Here's a description, a plot description of mine. Anybody that's ever really listened to the show, you already know what it is because it hasn't changed. My son, if he's listening, absolutely knows what it is. As a modern-day scientist, Tommy is struggling with mortality, desperately searching for the medical breakthrough that will save the life of his cancer-stricken wife, Izzy. It stars Hugh Jackman, Rachel Weisz. Uh-oh. It's directed by Darren Aronofsky, and it's that piece of shit called The Fountain.
I so disagree.
Fucking hate that movie. It is a metaphor wrapped in a metaphor paper and metaphorically jammed down my literal throat. It's pompous. It's overindulgent. It's overreaching. It's plotting. It's pointless. And there's so many metaphors, and he's in a bubble, and it's a fucking bubble of life. And
it's achingly beautiful.
It's fucking achingly retarded. There are smarter movies made by some kid in his mom's basement right now than that piece of shit, and somehow he got a huge budget for it. It's one of the best performances by Hugh Jackman in an absolutely abysmal movie I've ever seen. Like, he couldn't even save it. That's how bad that movie was. I remember walking out and just hating it. And I even tried later. I'm like, maybe it was a bad moment. I'll put it in again. Nope. 20 minutes in, I couldn't watch that movie because I was already irritated again. Like, this movie is so fucking stupid. And, I still get angry thinking about it. One last question. Those are our picks. Those are the worst movie we consider, but we've still got listener picks to go through, which there's some fun ones in there. Is there anything that could have saved your movie for you? That could have actually kept you from hating it? Would have made you respect it? Would have made you enjoy it? Anything?
Well, for mine, Battlefield Earth, like Justin said, I've not read it myself, but I've heard lots of people claim that the book is really good, very interesting. So I think a script that actually made sense and didn't have quite the dumb lines that movie did, and maybe a lead actor that actually took the role seriously. I just got the impression that Travolta just really didn't give a crap while he was doing that role. It just looked like
that's what's so odd, is this was a Travolta passion project. I mean, the book is written by L. Ron Hubbard, who is the creator of Dianetics, which is also Scientology, of which John Travolta is a massive believer in. So this book was something he had been trying to do for so long. Figure that shit out.
It doesn't look like he did, though. Are you with me?
I actually think he tried his best to do this performance of this kind of snivelly, conniving alien character. And I think he went too far over the top with it to the point that it was almost a cartoon.
Almost? Almost?
Well, no, not even almost. It's like a cartoon villain performance.
Scooby-Doo could have showed up in that bitch, and I wouldn't have been shocked.
Yeah, it's just It's really funny that he loved this thing so much and was so far behind it to get it made, and yet he was a failure in it, and it was a total failure.
Think about it, Scott. I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you meddling kids.
The whole movie just felt like a joke that no one got. It really, and it wasn't supposed to be. It was
I laughed, if that helps.
Well, yeah.
A lot. You know what? I like Barry Pepper. Mm-hmm. He's a good actor. That movie, I think, just completely destroyed any career chances he had.
What happened to him?
Now he's doing bit parts, and he's a character actor because he'll never be a lead again. John Travolta killed that option. Him and his dreadlocks. Fucking Busta Rhymes wannabe. What about Brian? Could anything have saved your movie? Alexander?
I don't know. Maybe edgier? I don't know. Maybe Zack Snyder do that before he did 300. I don't know.
That could have been interesting. Hey.
You know, it's kind of a darker edge instead of cramming it full of pretty people like Troy.
I like Troy. You didn't like Troy?
I like Troy.
Yeah, I like Troy. That was a good movie. It was fun. You didn't like it?
You said no honorable mentions.
That answers that.
Justin, what about you? Could anything have saved Ultraviolet?
I think if Kurt Wimmer had focused on fewer details and was able to expand them a bit more, it might have saved it. Had it not been some kind of vampire allegory or I don't think they ever actually say vampire in the movie. Maybe they do, but if it had just been a disease, I mean, take away a couple things so that the rest of it can breathe, or just keep the camera on Mila Jovovich's ass the entire movie. Maybe that would have saved it.
That would make it better.
It would have made it better. Yes,
mm-hmm. It would have made it better.
Nice. So yeah, just basically, if it had been Mila Jovovich's ass, the movie. Might have made it better.
I think The Fountain could have been better if Aronofsky had been chemically blinded temporarily. I mean, he gets his sight back. And they had to replace him with pretty much anyone, including Oliver Stone. I think maybe even John Travolta could have done it. And just tone down the metaphors a hair. You know, bring in Bryan Singer. Hugh Jackman likes him a lot. Or somebody along those lines. But that's really the metaphors and the nailing it into the fucking wall with the metaphors is definitely what hurt that film for me personally. But let's see what our listeners think. You know, they've got a lot of options, and it's funny because there are hardly any repeats, and this is probably one of the more popular topics we've ever had. So we're devoting a significant portion of the time. I would skip ahead 5 minutes if you're selfish and you don't care about other people's thoughts. But we're going to talk about their pick. So let's go through what the listeners picked.
Cade Eastham says Ben Affleck Daredevil. Boo.
Boo.
Now, are you guys saying are you saying bad choice, or are you saying you agree in boo?
I disagree.
I disagree with Senior Eastham.
And I do want to say, when we're going through these, we did cut off a lot of the comments and stuff just because, you know, there's a lot of them, so we don't have time to do all the second and third mentions you made and all the appreciate the comments. We don't have time.
You don't
get
honorable mentions either.
Exactly. But I want to say that the Daredevil director's cut is good. And I wish more people, you didn't like, oh yeah, you like
no,
the theatrical.
I don't. I actually like the theatrical cut better.
Either way, I didn't think it's a worst movie ever, but
no,
teach their own.
Well, Dave Kramer says The Room, but it's really one of those so bad it's good types. And that's why it wasn't on my list for worst, because oh man, that movie's bad.
It's so bad, but it's entertaining to watch. You can't help but laugh. I feel good when it's over.
It's kind of like, yeah, I guess it's kind of like watching Honey Boo Boo, you know.
Whoa, easy killer.
Mm.
Hey, it's so bad, but you start watching it, you're finishing that episode.
Okay.
It's just, there's something about it. Anna Maria Jerma? Anyway, she says her choice is Twilight. 2 hours, I'll never get back.
Whew. I am in the absolute minority that I like the first Twilight.
Oh.
I do.
Oh.
I like the first Twilight, and I like the last Twilight. It's the ones in the middle I don't like. Yeah, I said it. Sorry, Anne-Marie. I can't change who I am.
Oh, if only.
Trust us, we've tried to change you.
Many times. Jason Taylor says, Knights of Badassdom, no contest.
Oh, no.
I haven't seen it, so I can't say, but I have heard a lot of bad, you know, negative comments about this movie. Enough that I don't think I ever need to try and see it.
Oh, no. I added it to my Netflix queue. I thought it looked really funny.
I thought it was going to be really funny, and it turned out that I was wrong.
Oh, really? That's a bummer.
Yeah. It's not very
good. I've got it in my queue, too, so now I'm...
It's free on Netflix. I mean, you can still watch it. It doesn't cost... That's sad if you don't want to watch a free movie.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they're releasing a lot of stuff on Netflix.
That's so true, yeah. Do what you got to do.
Craig Schermerhorn says, First Family, Bob Newhart, Gilda Radner, terrible.
I've never seen that.
Me either.
Yeah. I'm not going to now. It's off the list.
Sean McGuire says, The Counselor, what a bag of shit.
That fucking was a piece of shit. I'm still angry about that movie, too. That one, and that would be pretty close, man. That would be my top five.
That's an honorable mention.
That would be my top five. Is that bad?
It's fucking jaw.
Wow.
Did you not listen when I was angered about it all year last year? Like, I took like 6 months off just to complain about it.
Oh, y'all are done?
Yeah. Sorry.
Sorry. Robert Noble, RIPD, what a disappointment. Could not agree more, piece of shit.
Wait a minute. You were excited for that movie?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I was because it's got Ryan Reynolds, who I adore. It's kind of a Men in Black meets Ghostbusters kind of thing. Yeah. Should have hit all my buttons, and it sucked.
It looked like it just rehashed all of the stuff that made those movies good.
Rooster Cogburn is Tommy Lee Jones. You didn't like that either?
No.
Josh Thyma says, In the Name of the King, a dungeon siege tale.
Oh, that's a good pick. Uwe Boll wins. Any Uwe Boll wins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sean St. Clair says, I will probably catch grief for this, but I say it's King Arthur with Clive Owen. And yes, sir, you will catch grief.
Not for me. I hate that movie. I thought it was dumb. I'm with you, Sean.
I like it. So all of y'all can suck it.
Okay.
John Hall says Howard the Duck, and I got to disagree on this one. I love Howard the Duck.
Wait,
it is
love
stupid,
it?
Yes. But it's one of those 80s movies that is so 80s and honest in what it's trying to do that I can't help but love it. I can't.
No, Top Gun is an 80s honest trying to be an 80s movie. Howard the Duck is just...
Did you see Leah Thompson's hair?
Did you see Howard the Duck?
Because it was the 80s.
Yeah, because it was the 80s, and she was a rocker chick, and she had the huge hair at the end, and they were singing Howard the Duck.
Oh, my God.
I know. I will be alone in this, and that's fine. I love Howard the Duck.
Isn't that the one that had, like, duck breasts in it or something?
Yes.
Yep. Duck titties.
Duck titties. Yep. You can't go wrong with duck titties, Scott.
Apparently in that world, ducks are mammals.
Because that makes sense.
Sometimes you just need to rub a duck titty.
Ugh. Justin Vaughn says, anything by The Asylum. And that's the company that makes like the pair, like almost ripoffs of other movies, right? Like,
yeah, he managed to get like 40 honorable mentions in
right,
that one.
Right, right. Or the Starving Games. Wasn't that – didn't they do this?
Yeah, I don't know the titles. I don't watch them.
Well, I haven't watched it, but you see it.
They make all kinds of crap, like Octopus versus Sharktopus, and I don't know, all kinds of bad stuff. Right. And they also make the ripoff movies, like War of the Worlds comes out, and they make War of the, you know, universes.
War of the Planets.
Yeah, or something stupid.
And anytime, and all like of their movie descriptions start out usually with some form of the same line that says, not to be confused with the mega hit.
Exactly. But we totally want you to be confused with the mega hit.
Right. Mecha shapeshifters, and there's a picture of Optimus Prime on the cover.
I want to talk to someone that's actually been duped by that. And just
there's a lot of people have been duped by it. My mom's been duped by it.
Really?
Yeah. She was very.
I was
gonna
say I think it's probably like, you know, parents who are looking passing by the shelf and say, my kid likes these Transformer things. Here, let me grab this. So, Scotch Calgaro says Purple Rain.
Whoa.
What?
Purple Rain.
I guess it's a terrible movie, but god damn, that soundtrack is fantastic.
I like me some
Gather
friends.
Around.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this thing called life.
Yellow beloved.
Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, love it. Wes Geary says, this is a right answer to this question. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He says there is a right answer to this question, and it is Alexander with Colin Farrell. So there's Brian getting more props.
Mm-hmm. Darling Nikki is a great song, too. Scotch, you son of a bitch. That's one of my favorite songs for varying reasons. Go ahead.
David McGrath says, Highlander 2, The Quickening, the sequel to one of my favorite movies, ended up being my most loathed.
It was bad.
It really was. I watched that as a kid, and I'm sitting there going, there's an energy field around the city.
I wish there would have been only one.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it took what was such a great premise. These immortal beings who you never really knew why they were immortal, but it didn't matter. Just these immortal beings had to be only one, cutting off a lot of heads. And they tried to explain it as they were aliens and shit. Oh, just whoever made that movie should have been kicked out of Hollywood and then just beaten into some dark corner never to be heard from again.
I think he went on to make Young Guns 2, but I could be wrong.
You didn't like Young Guns 2?
No, I'm saying that director, I believe.
Oh, went out well, he really did.
Yeah, which I really like.
Mike Card says Birdemic.
Yeah, that's bad. That's kind of like, it's pretty well known as a bad movie.
Okay. Missed that one.
Jacob Bahi says Surf Nazis Must Die. Trauma, trash, blech.
Yeah, that's bad.
And with a title like that, do you expect it to be?
I thought it was art, man. Oscar worthy. Right. I don't know why I watch those things, but I always get sucked in.
Amanda Sink says Lady in the Water was a nightmare. Yes, it was. That movie.
That is a fantastically horrible movie.
Oh, that's the one that had the one dude that only worked out one arm, right?
And you have that discussion with people, and there are people that will sit there and argue how that's an artfully brilliant movie that is misunderstood. And I'm like, the only person that misunderstands that are dumb people, because it's
awful.
Are the
people that like it.
I've never actually seen it, and I feel kind of bad that I haven't.
You shouldn't.
Because I like M. Night, even though he's made some shitty movies.
Really?
I want to be a believer.
Yeah, his shit to good ratio is like 4-1.
No, he's had two good movies. Two really, yeah. Really good movies.
And like five bad ones in a row.
I would say three. Shit. I like three of his movies.
Yeah, I like Signs. The Last Airbender.
Oh, that was awful.
Yeah. The Happening.
I don't think Devil was terrible. It was that
he
bad.
Didn't direct it. He just produced that one.
Oh, is that one?
Yeah.
Next.
Yeah. All right. Paula Sale says Artificial Intelligence.
I like that movie up until The Blue Fairy.
I didn't really like the movie, but The Blue Fairy ruined it. So
is that the Haley Joel Osment?
Yeah,
that was bad.
I like Gigolo Joe. That's about it.
Reese Bennett says Batman and Robin, otherwise known as Batnips.
That's a good pick. Where would that go in the pantheon of horrible movies? That'd be right up there, I would imagine.
Empire Online rates it as the number one worst movie of all time.
You know, I avoided that movie because
seen it?
Because everyone told me how bad it was. I was like, why would I waste my time on this? I've seen all the clips of like.
Check it out.
Puts on ice.
Put some ice on it. Just do it. Check it out, man.
I don't think I want to.
You should.
Nick Brown says Yeti, A Love Story.
I don't know that one.
I don't either.
Yep,
I know Yentl. Is it the sequel?
Yeti was probably made by Asylum. So that's probably what it is.
It probably was, yeah.
Carlos Hernandez says Freddy Got Fingered.
Another one,
yeah,
I avoided.
I hate Tom Green.
I do not like Tom Green. He's good in about 5 minutes, and then after 5 minutes, you want him gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean from the earth.
From the planet.
From the planet. Get him gone.
Peter Germany says, Skyline, so much potential wasted. You know, I got to say, it's a pretty shit film, but the special effects are so good, it barely gets a pass off of bad. And it just kind of, meh.
Mm-hmm.
Do y'all remember this movie?
Yeah, I saw it. And it was not, I think it sits firmly in bad. I'm quite comfortable with that.
I love the shiny special effects.
And I liked when it came out and they advertised it like it was some big special effects extravaganza, which the effects are fine. It's just everything else that's horrible.
Yeah. Robert John Davenport says Battlefield Earth. I got someone that agrees with
me. There you go.
Rohan Morby says A Good Day to Die Hard, the only film I've ever walked out on at the cinema.
Now that was the one with
Jay Courtney.
Is that the one?
Yeah, it's the most recent one.
Oh, okay. Then yeah, that was terrible.
Yep, that one was pretty bad, and I'm so sad that it was. Was that it,
Steve?
Oh, there's more.
Yeah, you sent us this.
Okay, I didn't memorize it.
It's like two fucking pages. Well, hold on. There may not be two. Just a second page added on, but it's blank. Steve Peterson says Crow 4, David Boreanaz, Terry Reid, direct-to-video. I think that says it all.
I remember
Terry Reid says it all.
I saw that movie.
Oh, my God, Terry Reid. I just watched Sharknado 2. Oh, my God. It's so awful.
Yeah. And not even in a good way. It's just bad.
Just fucking awful.
Austin Price, M. Night Crapalon's Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Mm. Ah. Good call. Good call.
Didn't waste my time on that one either.
Paul Hanahan says, a recent one from me, Fassbender's The Counselor. Total shite.
Oh, we got two votes for that piece of shit. Yeah.
Stephen White, The Room, no doubt. It's so bad, but so much fun to watch. Then doesn't that kind of make it not good? But to me, bad implies you never want to see it again, and there was nothing fun about it.
Yeah, see, yeah, bad. Yeah, to me, bad. It there's something like in my stomach that turns, and you know that I just want to punch somebody, something, break something. I can't believe I'm watching this, you know. But if it's something that's just so ridiculous, you know, that like any kind of, I don't know, Toxic Avenger or something type movie, you just kind of take into account that. All right, this is crap. I can deal with it. And then you kind of set your entertainment level a lot lower. But, I don't know.
Is that it? Two more. One more. This guy's giving me fingers and he's telling me different things. He's really messing with my head.
I'm seeing one more. But Michael Bonovich.
I think he's calling you to third base.
Oh, okay.
Michael Bonovich says, Catwoman, me barf.
Catwoman's a good pick. Although I kind of like the Sharon Stone in that movie. She's so batshit crazy. Like, batshit crazy.
Did you see the basketball scene in Catwoman?
Hey, I'm just saying Sharon Stone I thought was interesting in that movie because she was just bonkers. Like, crazy. Well, that's going to do it, I think, for... I love the feedback. That was great, guys. Thanks for filling that in. Remember to like us on Facebook. We have a Hollywood Outsider Facebook group for movie and TV fans while we're taking our break, but not quite a break because you're still getting episodes. You can always talk to us there. There's a link in the show notes. It's for fans of movies and TV completely, not just for fans of the show. Review us on iTunes and we'll read your review on the show. And we've got a couple emails before we say goodbye, our own personal goodbyes to you guys. Scott?
First one comes from Shane Hoens. I enjoyed the Christmas host special. Listening to Aaron and Scott reflecting on their holiday memories and even getting a bit personal hit home in so many ways and was very refreshing. It was a very refreshing host special. I love the poem Scott wrote.
That was good.
I want to give a warm Christmas shout out to the entire Ho team. You guys give your fans so many laughs and intriguing discussions every week from inside the world of film and TV. Thank you and may your Christmas be filled with joy. And as Jim Carrey said it as the Grinch, and they'll feast, 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 feast. They'll eat their Who pudding and rare Who roast beef. But that's something I just cannot stand in the least. Oh, no. I'm speaking in rhyme.
Thanks, Shane. Justin?
Ashley says, I'm freaking still here. Don't you fear. Oh, shit. She rhymes.
She's rhyming, too.
I listen every week and pay close attention to both the official Ho Facebook and website and the Side Movie Fan Facebook. You guys are still going strong and are definitely still my favorite podcast. I love the Sons of Anarchy and Walking Dead after show chats. Keep this going. Also, I can't wait for your next spoiler cast. Hobbit?
Next week.
It will be Hobbit. Thanks again, guys.
Brian?
This is from Tommy Lynch in Bathgate, Scotland. He says, after listening to the podcast for a few months and loving every minute of it, I finally got the movie. This week it's Gross Point Blank, and the dialogue is between Minnie Driver and John Cusack. Hope you all enjoy the holidays. And thank you, Tommy.
Yeah, from Scotland.
Awesome.
I love Scotland. That's party. I'm glad you finally got one. Congratulations. This is from Ryan Shireman. He says, hey, Aaron, great podcast. I have a suggestion for a discussion topic. Favorite best movies that people haven't heard of. Once in a while, you guys mention movies that you like that I've never heard of. I want to check those movies out. but usually forget to make note of them. It would be cool to have a podcast with a bunch of suggestions of movies to watch like this. My contribution, The Tao of Steve. I saw that a long time ago. He says, have you seen it? I did. I have seen it, but I can't remember it, so I would have to go refresh my memory. Hilarious. Thanks for all you guys do. Happy holidays. Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate that.
Did The Tao of Steve, did that have
Donald Logue?
Yeah, Donald Logue.
Donald Logue. It was a fat redheaded guy who shouldn't even be seen within, 50 yards of a woman, but yet he just got so much play and he was trying to, impart his wisdom. And there's some very sound logic in some of his tips.
And there were a couple of emails that came in right as we started recording the show, so we won't be able to read those. I'm sorry we couldn't get to them, but we will bring them up hopefully in the next original full whole episode. Right now, we are going to say our goodbyes to you guys. We have an opportunity because I do want to stress there is going to be an episode Christmas week for the Hobbit trilogy, and then we're going to have Best of Listener Picks Volume 2 New Year's week. But our next full episode with all four of us will be January 8th, I believe. So with that in mind, this is going to be the last time we're all four together to say goodbye to you guys for the year. So I want the chance to say that. Justin, what has this year meant to you, and what would you like to say to these guys as we bow out?
It's just been another great year of doing this podcast. We have our ups and our downs, our fights. We also have those moments when we come together and share love about something. And it's just nice to be able to spend an evening, a week, just talk with people who love movies as much as I do.
And buy your book.
Well, I get dinged for promoting too much. So I just figured I'd leave that alone.
Well, shit, okay. You had your own fucking segment an hour and a half ago.
I put that in. He didn't ask for it. I put that in. I put that in.
Well, I get dinged for talking about games too much, so I'm going to do that too.
Yeah.
But I really appreciate this show, obviously, as well. But I also appreciate that because of this show, I've also been able to kind of branch off a little bit and start The Gaming Outsider. And I've made some friendships there and had a really good place to talk about what I love there too. So thanks for everybody that has joined in on that. And please keep it going. Hopefully we'll branch that off a little bit down the road.
Brian?
Yeah, I'd just like to kind of thank everybody out there for all of your downloads, all of your tweets, all of your Facebook messages, engaging us on both the Facebook page and the group. You guys really drive our show. Without your questions, your comments, your snarky remarks, your little news ideas, that kind of stuff. Aaron would have to work a whole lot harder to keep this entertaining for you guys. And so, like I said, this is we kind of started this selfishly, but the bottom line is for the last few years, we've been doing this for you guys, and really, really means a lot to us. The growth that we've seen this past year, I think has been phenomenal. I mean, you mentioned Scotland earlier, and we're all over the globe.
Yeah. Australia, Korea, Norway, Europe,
Estonia,
Russia. Yeah, I mean, There's fucking Russians listen.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, I feel bad because we're kind of representing America to a degree, and I can't imagine that's a good thing. I'm sorry. Anything else?
Oh, shit. Not now. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Ass.
Sincerely, did you want to say anything else?
Sincerely, fuck off.
All right. Touche.
Just kidding. No, I'm done. I'm done. No seriousness, but thank you.
First off, I want to wish everybody the happiest of holidays, New Year, everything. I hope everybody has a safe and happy one with your family, friends, or by yourself, whatever you're doing. I want to thank everybody that listens to the show. We definitely appreciate it, especially subscribers, the guys that listen every single week. It always amazes me year in it's year in. Wow, it's been doing this a long time. Year in and year out, it shocks me how many people listen to this so regularly that Thursday is one of the first things they do is listen to the show. Maybe because I don't find myself that entertaining, and I definitely don't find these guys that entertaining.
Nope.
So it shocks me that so many other people do. And the fact that we have people that have been listening since we started.
Or started recently and went all the way back.
And all the way back, or yeah, and the back catalog. God. that astounds me. I mean, it astounds me. I think we've some things have helped. You know, Scott's talked about his gaming outsider, Justin's books. I think we've pushed some serious sales on his books. It just shocks
never
me.
Have enough.
No, I know. I know, Justin. We can never have enough. Some of the stuff impressed me. The PR people that are starting to contact us and stuff. I mean, that's just icing on the cake. But really, it's the listeners that keep coming back, that keep giving us feedback and keep appreciating the show. Donations that we've got this past year that helps pay for the show. We don't really make any money. Seriously, we're not rolling or anything. We do it because you guys appreciate it. Although Justin's getting rich off his book sales. just kidding. He's trying though, and he's really hoping he'll get there so he can leave. That's his dream.
Please, people, I'm hoping.
So I just want to say thank you to everybody. Definitely appreciate it. Love the topics you've been sending in. They will be next year. We've got so many from listeners. I don't have to think of one for a while, which is great. Love it. So we're gonna do that in the next year, and just keep listening and keep sharing. Tell your friends. Check out The Hollywood Outsider, subscribe and whatnot. Email places that you like and tell them that you like the show so that we can keep doing what we do.
Just a couple of quick reminders, too. Don't forget, we had our Christmas episode recently, which Aaron and I did. Sincerely, one of the most fun episodes I've done in a long time. It was a lot of fun. And we've got the upcoming Hobbit spoiler cast, which these three guys will all be on. And then Aaron's also going to post our Best of Ho episodes coming up here. In the near future. Lastly, this is also the last week, too, to get in on that donation for my Child's Play charity drive that I'm putting together. That ends on the 21st. I want to get that all wrapped up so we can get that money to that charity. So if you're in the given holiday mood, please consider donating. It's an awesome, awesome charity.
And that's going to do it. Anything final for anybody else?
Hey, one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron, I just want to say congratulations to you for making the championship game in our fantasy football league.
Yes, the fantasy football league. Brian and I are in the finals, but Wally and Josh, they are in the fight for the winner of the whole prize to come on and review a movie with us. I don't know if that's a prize or a punishment, whichever one of them is going to. So that'll be determined before the year's out. That looks very interesting. We'll announce the winner of that when we come back. Okay, guys, stay tuned to the credits for outtakes. Go to thehollywoodoutsider.com. Tweet us on @_outsider. facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Email us feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Listen and subscribe for free on iTunes. Listen on your Stitcher Radio app or through our RSS feed. That is going to do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. Justin, Brian, Scott, say goodbye.
Happy holidays. Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah, everybody have a Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Be safe. Have a lot of fun. And we'll see y'all again soon.
Justin, you were cut off.
How's it feel?
Bye.
See you.
Remember, the next time you go to a theater.
Bye, popcorn.
Not at the interview, though. Buy microwave popcorn because you've been watching that shit at home.
Well, this is beautiful. I cannot wait to take it out. And
no, I kind of.
You mean the present, right?
You take it home overnight, all that butter that's in there just soaks into the popcorn, and it makes it so much better.
Okay.
How much?
So much better.
I'm actually with you, dude. I sometimes prefer the old popcorn.
Really?
Oh,
you guys are...
So if it's,
why do you want to live like the homeless?
Have you ever had any like homemade stew that like you kept some leftovers in your fridge and then days later?
I honestly don't eat leftovers.
Oh, really?
I'm too fancy, man. I just can't do it.
I'm so fancy.
Don't sing that stupid song.
You already know. G-G-Y. Did you do that? Do that.
Don't eat leftovers.
Come on, make it right.
Tokyo.
No dinty more for me.